Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Trainer of Champions. And the future stars. And you come and listen to the interviews and the boxing news and the boxing historian. We have Bob Murray live here with us from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, in studio. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, pretty good, Aaron. Yes, indeed. We're over here, and we're okay in Pottsville, but, man, a lot of the East Coast and places were flooded, and there's still power outages. Pretty wild, a little nor'easter came blowing through yesterday, and, you know, some places I know are struggling, but we're up and ready to roll here, man. We're good.
Well, that's a good thing. There's a lot of stuff going on and around in boxing, you know, from some heavyweight, cruiserweight, all different types of things. So you bring us each week doing a great job from around the world. Last week we gave you boxing news that was happening in 22 countries around the world, Bob. That's a lot.
That was wonderful.
When you bring us stuff like that, that brings in the listening audience, you know, because we have people listening to us all around the world, you know, mostly all the English-speaking countries from Australia, Canada, England, and not in Norway, France, England, you know. So our show is tuned in from around the world, and this is why we bring you things that are happening around the world in boxing, and that's why we're called the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Bob.
That's right. Hey, also, Aaron, before I get started here, I want you to just quick tell people, we had a little special show you did on Sunday after we did our show last week. I wasn't available, but you got to talk with, Tim Witherspoon's son about something happened, too. So tell people they can catch that archive, too. But briefly, what was that about?
Well, Tim Witherspoon and his son, they're going into a new venture. Tim Witherspoon being a two-time heavyweight champion of the world. His son used to fight. His son was done very well when he was fighting. But he had start doing personal training. His son did, and Tim's training fighters and working with fighters, and he's over in England right now. So his son and them, they have this historic building down in Philadelphia that they're developing into a boxing gym. And they're going to have a pre-opening, and then they're going to have a grand opening. So he came on the show to tell us about that. And if people want to listen to the show, Bob, we do have our website up and going. It's www.theworldboxingreview.com, or else to, and the shows, all the shows that we have done, they're archived up there. So you can just draw down a list of shows, click on the play thing, and listen to all the past shows that we did. This is great, Bob. Bob, you're bringing us a long way, baby. You know, back in the day, man, you showed us how to do this thing, and we're trying to bring it up the speed with all of this internet stuff. And I know from time to time, Bob, like you tell me, it's the internet, phones. You know, we have people in Vegas, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and on the wireless networks and things, and a lot of times, you know, things start glitching on the computer because it is on the internet, and sometimes the speed and stuff is not up to par. So sometimes you hear glitching or something like that, and plus the internet company that we're using to bring you this show with Blog Talk Radio, they had a problem with their total phone system. So when we do our thing, it was causing a lot of problems with us. But it seems like they have fixed it now, at least today. And we'll see, you know, when the guests start coming in, calling in, and our boxing historian, we'll see what the changes have made in how to adjust it. But we apologize to our fan, and I hope you be patient with us as we grow, as we start to bring you all of this piling of information around the world. So, Bob, what do we got happening around the world?
Well, all eyes on the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York City tonight. That's the one we were waiting for, the WBC World Heavyweight title fight between the champion Deontay Wilder, 39-0, 38 of those wins by knockout, and the challenger Luis Ortiz, 28-0, 24 KOs. We'll be talking about that after we're done with the news. That'll be the big highlight of the day. Also, we have Andre Durrell. He's 26-2, 16 knockouts. He'll defend his interim IBF World Super Middleweight title against Jose Uzgategui, who's also 26-2, 22 knockouts, and that's a big rematch. Super welterweights Patrick Day, 14-2-1, goes against Kyron Davis, 13-1. And the vacant WBA World Female Super Middleweight title will be decided between Alicia Napoleon, she's 8-1, and Famke Hermans, who's 6-0. Over in Manhattan, across the East River tonight, at Madison Square Garden, Sergey Kovalev, 31-2 losses, 1 draw, 27 KOs, defends his WBO World Light Heavyweight title against Igor Bakhalkin. He's 21-1, 9 KOs, while Dmitry Bivol, 12-0, 10 KOs, defends his WBA World Light Heavyweight title versus Sullivan Barrera. He's 21-1 with 14 KOs. And we also know that scheduled there in June at the 11th over in Saudi Arabia, we have the Gassiev-Alexander title fight for the cruiserweight title in the World Super Series of Boxing. So we're seeing some good action here in the light heavyweight title. And there's another one going on we'll get to later, too. So also happening at Madison Square Garden, though, we have two up-and-coming super welterweight battles as Bakram Murtazaliyev, he's 11-0, 9 KOs. He steps in with Kenneth McNeil, who's 11-3, 8 KOs. An undefeated super middleweight, Vaughn Alexander, 11-0, 8 knockouts, takes on the 12-3-2 Jaime Sartorio. In Clearwater, Florida, the vacant IBO Continental and the National Boxing Association World Lightweight title is up for grabs as the 24-1 William Silva and Rogelio Casares, he's 13-6, go at it. At the Sky U Casino in Ignacio, Colorado, Layla McCarter, she's 40 wins, 13 losses, 5 draws, and Victoria Cisneros, she's 13-19-2, seek both the vacant GBU and the vacant IBF female world welterweight titles. Another vacant title fight takes place tonight at the Hollywood Casino in Columbus, Ohio, as Jamie Walker, 8-0-1, and Skender Halili, 15-2, seek the WBA, NABA, USA super welterweight title. Also on the bill, Brian Holstein, 13-7-1, will defend his NBA, NABA, USA cruiserweight title against Nick Kisner, 19-4-1. At the Jackson County Expo in Central Point, Oregon, the cruiserweight battle between Mike Wilson, 18-0, versus Mario Aguilar, 18-3, is the headliner. And in Scranton, PA, right up the road here at the Jannetty Manor, it's Tyleek Taylor versus Jimmy Jordan in a light heavyweight tilt at the top of that card. Across the Blue Atlantic in Sheffield, UK, Kell Brook, 36-2, 25 knockouts, and Sarahi Rabchanka, 29-2, with 22 knockouts, vie for the vacant WBC Silver Super Welterweight title. And Gamalia Fai, 14-0, defends his WBC International Super Bantamweight title against the challenger Gavin McDonald, who's 18-1-2. Also on the card, heavyweight Lenroy Thomas, 22-4, defends his Commonwealth heavyweight title in a rematch with David Allen, who's 12-3-1. Undefeated Kit Galahad, 23-0, takes on Irving Berry, 23-7-2, in a featherweight matchup as well. At York Hall in London, Robert Asagra, 4-1, versus Justin Menzies, 3-2-1, in a welterweight clash, tops the bill. Also seeing action will be cruiserweight Dion Juma, 8-0, and Christian Kirillov, who's 5-5-1. And Sean Robinson, 5-0, will fight William Warburton, who lost just last week, who brings his record to 24 wins, 129 losses, and 10 draws. We like watching William Warburton. At the Camden Center in London, Louis Green, 8-0, defends his Triple BFC Southern Area welterweight title against the 7-1-1 Joe Hayes. In Brentwood, UK, Matt McCarthy, 18-1, defends his Triple BFC Southern Area super welterweight title against the 16-1 Billy Byrd. In Blackburn, Lancashire, UK, the headliner is the super lightweight fight between Shakib Ali, 8-0, versus Inosante Anyanwu, 65-27-3. In Walsall, UK, Danny Ball, 3-0, stepping in with Danny Little, 7-40-2, in a welterweight matchup, tops that card. In Glasgow, Scotland, is a big night as four title fights are set, topped by two super lightweight fights. Josh Taylor, 11-0, 10 wins by a knockout, defends his WBC silver super lightweight title against Winston Campos, who's 30 wins, 3 losses, and 5 draws, 18 KOs. And Jason Easton, 11-0, and Glenn Foote, 21-3, seek the vacant Commonwealth super lightweight title. Chantel Cameron, she's 5-0, defends her IBO World Female Lightweight title against Miriam Delal, who's 15-7-3. And we're watching that fight, too, because we know Katie Taylor and Victoria Bustos go at it on the 28th of April. And Delphine Pearson is the leader in that, the WBC champion. So we'll get to see a little bit of that interesting female lightweight division here over in England tonight. Charlie Flynn also is on that card. He's 10-0-1, and Ryan Collins, 13-2-1. They vie for the vacant Triple BFC Celtic lightweight title. In Cologne, Germany, the WBC International super middleweight title fight between the champion Avni Yildirim, he's 17-1, 11 KOs, and the challenger Derek Edwards, 27-7-2, highlight a big night with two other title fights on tap as well. The vacant WBC International silver lightweight title match between Marek Jerzyzewski, 13-0, and Robert Tlotlik, he's 21-1. And that follows the WBC Mediterranean super middleweight title fight between Yusuf Kangwell, 14-2-1, and Sladan Zanjanin, 23-1. In Weisenfeld, Germany, Dominic Bossel, he's another great light heavyweight. He's 26-1, and Serhii Demchenko, 18-11-1, both seek the vacant EBU European light heavyweight title, while two other great young light heavyweights, Adam Daines, 13-0-1, and Stefan Hertel, 15-0, both seek the vacant Germany BDB light heavyweight title. In Carlsberg, Ahmad Ali, 11-0-1, and Aro Schwartz, 15-4, vie for the vacant GBU world middleweight title. In Essen, Patrick Korte, 12-0, 10 wins by KOs, defends his Germany GBA heavyweight title against Andre Mazanek, who's 12-8, and Sergei Vieb, 10-8, and Sebastian Tlotlik, 12-1, battle for the vacant German international lightweight title. In Dublin, Ireland, at the National Stadium, the night is highlighted by the battle for the vacant BUI Ireland super welterweight title between Craig O'Brien, 7-0, and Jay Burns, 6-3. In Piedmont, Italy, the super bantamweight clash between Benoit Mano, 16-2, and Luca Genovese, 4-10-5, highlights. While in Tuscany, it's Nicola Henchiri, 2-3-1, versus Dionisi Tiganis, who's 7-4-1, tops the bill. In Calentin, France, the battle for the vacant France super featherweight title between Mathieu Lehot, 10-8-1, and Dame Sec, 11-18-2, highlights. While in Châteauroux, it's Thomas Farr, 11-3, versus Guillaume Hay in a light heavyweight matchup. Pas-de-Calais is the site for the super lightweight tilt between Leia Duadi, 11-0-1, and Modibo Diarra, who's 8-2-1. The hosts a card featuring the middleweight matchup between Miko Grousset, he's 0-1-1, and Vincent Galazzo, 1-4-1. Eschero France has Jorik Musetto, 3-0, and Koto Yotongnan, 1-2, in a welterweight fight at the top. And in Seinon, Sylvain Laval, 1-1, versus Jonathan Cotteret, 2-5-1. In a light heavyweight matchup is the feature. In Sevilla, Spain, it's Carlos Perez, 10-5-1, versus Michael Isaac Carrero. He comes in with a record of 13 wins, 43 losses, 5 draws. That's a lightweight battle at the top. And in Puerto de la Cruz, it's Mustafa Guillet. He's 1-1, stepping in with Jose Hernandez, 4-17-1, in a featherweight tilt. And in South America, in Villa del Rosario, Venezuela, the super lightweight battle between hometown hero Romain Villa. He's undefeated, 14-0, all wins by knockout. He goes against Derwin Medina, 8-4-1. A good lightweight fight between Jader Parra. He's 30 wins, 2 losses, 1 tie. And Patrick Lopez, 25-10, is also on that card. In Arroyo Seco, Argentina, Luis Ernesto Rueda, 17-0, defends his IBF Latino lightweight title against the challenger Miguel Herman Acosta, 10-6-1. In Buenos Aires, it's light heavyweights Ruben Eduardo Acosta, 35-15-5, and Cesar Hernandez Reynoso, 14-10-4. They go at it. In Trinidad, Bolivia, it's Vinny Carita, 18-1-1, and Saul Farah, 65-23-3, in a cruiserweight battle. In Ciudad Neza, Mexico, the vacant Mexico heavyweight title fight will be between Abraham Pascual, 10-4, and Carlos Carreon, 6-4. In Guaynabo, Puerto Rico, the night is headlined with the super featherweight fight between Juan Manuel Lopez, 35-5, and Jason Velez, 25-4-1. Three title fights tonight in Kempton Park, Gauteng, South Africa, highlighted by Kelvin Larena. He's 19-1, 9 KOs, defending his IBO World Cruiserweight title against Demetrio Kucher, 24-2-1. The vacant WBC International Welterweight title is up for grabs as well between Thulani Munyenge, he's 12-0, 10 KOs, and Diego Cruz, 18-5-2. Also, DJ Creel, 13-1-1, and Jolisa Magusha, 10-2-1, vie for the WBC International minimum weight title. And in the Far East, in Kawasaki, Japan, Masayuki Kuroda, 28-7-3, 16 wins by knockout, defends his Japanese flyweight title against challenger Katsunori Nagamine, 14-1-1, 10 KOs. Also, middleweight Hikaru Nishida, 17-8-1, 8 knockouts, defends his Japanese title against Kazuto Takisako, 7-0, all 7 wins by knockout. That should be a good fight there. In Sabayan, Philippines, Alfo Dagoyan, 8-2-5, meets J.R. Diama, 7-13-7, to defend his Philippines Boxing Federation Super Flyweight title in a match rescheduled from last week. And in Bangkok, Thailand, the featherweight fight between the 7-1 Nurshahida Rosli and the 3-3 Sumanthar Bakham is the highlight. So there we go, Aaron. Not quite 22 countries, but we've got about 18 or so today. So not bad, but of course, all eyes on Barclays Center tonight with the Wilder fight. But as we talked about earlier, too, some really interesting light heavyweight matchups too across the world tonight as well.
Oh, absolutely, and we can't forget the fight that's coming up with Horn and Crawford. You know, they're having a little bit of controversy about Manny Pacquiao being on that card. It's supposed to be pay-per-view ESPN in April, but it looks like Manny Pacquiao, some people over there in China want to put up some cash for him to fight over there. So it looks like they're going to pull Pacquiao card and put him on another show over in China. So they're in those type of conversations, Bob Arum. A lot of people were saying that Manny Pacquiao and Bob Arum are at odds. You know, from time to time they'd be feuding. Like anything, you know, business, you're pushing and pulling for the very best and more dollar bills. So that's where they're at with that. But Bob Arum released a statement and said that him and Manny Pacquiao have no problem. Is that they're trying to work out in details if these people can come up with the cash. Is that they Manny Pacquiao will most likely fight in China. And let me tell you something. In Macau, you're talking about billionaires. You know, them Chinese are really putting in those casinos and things like that a lot of money. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. People say the Cayman Islands used to be the place. They're saying for China now, Macau is the place. It's the cash cow.
Yeah.
It's Macau. That's where everybody's putting their money havens in. Over there, and it looks like they want to give Manny Pacquiao some of that loot over there, and that's good for boxing, Bob. You know,
yes, it is. Yeah, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But that Horn and Crawford fight, that's going to be a real good fight. It's going to be interesting. You know, with Horn, who beat Manny Pacquiao and had one title defense to be with Terrence Crawford. Man, Terrence Crawford, bar none, can. Everybody knows he can outright fight, and Jeff Horn is just, each time he climbs in the ring, he's just more surprising and more surprising. And it seems that Jeff Horn rises to his level of competition, and that's what makes that fight a great matchup with on ESPN, ESPN pay-per-view, and it gives us something again, Bob, to talk about in boxing. But however, however, the big thing tonight, you know, Bob, when the heavyweight division and the heavyweight champions are at it, and you got guys that are fighting and they don't mind fighting one another, the heavyweight division sparks boxing second to none. You know, and tonight matchup with Dante Wilder and Ortiz, it's a great heavyweight matchup.
Yes, it is. Both undefeated as well, as we know, yeah. And both of them looking to see if they can hurt each other, because neither one's really been hurt. So that's the big thing. Who's going to take the punches best, you know?
Yeah, well, this is it's something that everybody wants to see. But the real matchup, that what the boxing fans want to see in the heavyweight division, is really Dante Wilder and Anthony Joshua. That's what everybody's talking about, because Dante Wilder's the champion. But tonight he has to get past someone tough, 28-0, 24 by the way of knockouts, you know what I mean, Bob, with Dante Wilder with 39 wins and 38 knockouts. You're talking about, we're going back to the days with the George Foreman and Joe Frazier type of fight, or Ron Law. You're talking about power. When you have these type of heavyweights with this amount of knockouts, most likely somebody's going to get knocked out if they bring their very best. You know, who's going to make who's going to make the first mistake? Who's going to create the first mistake that creates the opening for somebody to whack out? But, Bob, we have a boxing, when it comes to boxing, a boxing expert who's our guest on the show. His name is second to none, Merle King. He has managed more heavyweight champions in the history of boxing than anybody. Carl King, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, welcome, Carl. Good to have you. Thank you, yeah, for coming up.
Thanks, Bob. I'm well, glad to be a part of this.
Oh, absolutely, bro. It's a second to none. We were talking about the heavyweight matchup tonight with Wilder and Ortiz.
Okay.
We're bringing on you on the show. We want your perspective. You know, what do you think about tonight in Brooklyn, New York? What's your outlook on it?
Well, it's twofold, I think, maybe a couple times forward. But here, I believe, you know, look, we got two heavyweights that are big men. Both of them are tall, they're thick, they're big. And they're relatively, by 1970s, 1980s standards, you would consider these guys on the backside of the career. Ortiz, I believe, is about 38 years old. Wilder's, what, 32, 33?
Correct.
But I kind of think that, you know, when you look at Deontay Wilder and the level of competition that he has faced thus far in his career, which he's handled them very easily, I think this would be easily considered his toughest matchup. Ortiz is a big puncher. He's, you know, got that Cuban pedigree, which is pretty, always been pretty good. It's, well, when you think of Cuban heavyweights, it's very difficult not to think of the great Teofilo Stevenson, who's a multiple gold medal winner. Not to compare Ortiz to Stevenson, but he's a big, big heavyweight with power. This fight is long overdue. I think that, you know, Ortiz has tested positive a couple of times. That delayed this showdown. But I think it's just a prelude to what's to happen in the heavyweight division. And Deontay Wilder, from an American perspective, is our last vestige for a unified heavyweight champion. We haven't had that since Evander Holyfield in 1999. So America's yearning for that heavyweight championship to return home. It should be an interesting match. I think I would like to see both guys get hit to see just how they stand up under punching pressure. But that could be the end of the show right there. It might be the first one that lands the best shot wins. I happen to like Wilder tonight. I think he's a tad bit quicker. He's younger. And I think he's eager to see what's down the road for him. So I'm leaning towards Wilder tonight, guys.
Oh, okay, well, you're leaning towards Wilder. Let's give you some information from yesterday, the weigh-in.
Okay.
And we want your perspective, all right? Wilder weighed 214 and about a quarter pounds. And Luis Ortiz, he weighed 241 pound and a half or a quarter, you could say. What do you feel about the weight difference and the size? Both of them are big men, but Wilder, 214, he sounds like he's a lean, mean fight machine, man.
He does. But, you know, at 6'7", you know, 214 pounds is kind of thin, to be honest with you. I would have thought he would be a tad bit heavier. Ortiz seems about right with the 241. And typically, in recent past, these heavyweights have been weighing, you know, upwards of 230, 240. A lot of times that's attributed to a lack of conditioning, and other times it's just simple size. Wilder at 214, I think you're right. He should be fleet of foot. He has the advantage in the hand speed. I think he has an underrated jab, and if he uses the jab properly, I think it could be an easy night. But as far as Ortiz is concerned, I think he wants to nullify that jab and try to get to the body a little bit and maybe slow Wilder down as a shot to win. He want to beat him down and take him into the deep waters. That would be my assessment. But again, Wilder, I think is eager to go. I think he's eager to go. I think he's eager to demonstrate his talents and skills so that he can be somewhat compared to Anthony Joshua of England, who's probably considered the heavyweight champion of the world.
You're absolutely right. But let's look at the height difference. Wilder, 6'7". Ortiz, 6'4". And style-wise, will Ortiz be able to go for it and put pressure on him? Or is he at his size at 6'4"? And Wilder, 6'7", is he going to be able to move and stay away with Wilder's good jab that he has?
Well, I would think that if I'm Ortiz, I would try to get on the inside to nullify that left jab and work what might be a relatively thin body, you know, and he's a big banger. So if he can bang to the body as well as they say he can, I think that would be the initial attack should be put into the slowing Wilder down and keeping him and getting postured into a slugfest as opposed to a boxing match. Wilder has
a, go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say Wilder with his height advantage. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The information that I have, it was surprising to me. And I'm getting this information from Showtime Tale of the Tape. They have Wilder's jab at 6'3", right? And Ortiz, excuse me, 83 inches. And Ortiz at 84, which is a little longer. But we always says is how you use your reach. What do you think about that? Because when you look at it, it's kind of funny. What do you feel about that?
Well, you know what? It does seem strange that a guy 6'4" would have a longer reach,
right?
Than the 6'7" guy.
It was surprising to me when I read that. I said, "Wow." You know,
yeah,
I said that.
That was surprising.
It is surprising to me because I didn't do that. I didn't know that until you mentioned it. At 6'4", though, when you look at it, 6'4", somewhat the size of possibly Larry Holmes. Larry's reach was 82, 83 inches long, or somewhere in that area. So it's not like I would say that Ortiz has extraordinarily long arms. It sounds more like Wilder has shorter arms for his height than what we might can imagine. You know, Ali's, I think, at 6'3", had an 82-inch reach. And at 6'7", you kind of would naturally guess that it would be slightly longer. But the way he uses his reach and the way he uses his jab, you can the way he jabs someone from the side, from a side angle, gives him a little more length on his body. And he'll have to be cautious of being countered. Because whenever he's in position to hit, he can get hit. So that's just a whole new twist on the fight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, Bob, do you have any questions for Carl King?
Do you see it going the distance? I mean, what do you think about that? Yeah, Carl. I think it might go the distance. I don't think anybody's going down. Yeah.
You know,
that's where I'm going
with
it. I'm thinking Wilder and, you know,
that's,
maybe
you know, you know what, Bob?
I'm looking forward to it.
I can actually see, the fight going the limit. The only time Wilder has gone the limit was against Burmese Stavern a few years back, and then he avenged that loss in grand style fashion in his last fight when he just destroyed him in one round. You know, here's the question that I have: whether or not Ortiz can take it on the chin, because I believe he's going to get hit, and he's going to get hit with that power right hand.
I think that's true. My question is that if Wilder, right, because we've seen him get hit a time before, it was like shocked him and surprised him. It's how he handles the power of Ortiz when he starts whacking. Is he going to keep his composure? Is he going to play around? Which, if he starts playing around, opening his eyes real wide and his mouth doing a whole bunch of crazy things, he could influence the judges going down the stretch for a decision. This is what I'm looking at.
Well, that's a very interesting observation because you do have – Wilder, I don't believe, should take the chances of playing around with a guy that's a big banger. He's waited a long time for his opportunity. And I'm sure they there's a little bad blood there. Wilder should take this fight seriously. If he's serious about his future, I think he needs to make a serious statement by dispatching Ortiz as quickly as possible, not playing around, not showboating, but be all business, and then you know, direct his thoughts and his future towards a unification match with either Parker or Joshua, and I would think he would prefer Anthony Joshua for the recognition's sake. But this is a fight, again, that Wilder showed us in his last fight that he can go wide. He got, when he had Berman in trouble, his shots became very wide, and that's something you don't like to see in a heavyweight because it opens itself up to be countered, and this guy is much too big a puncher to open yourself up to and give him an opportunity to turn the fight around with one or two punches.
Yeah, I think this here, too. Wilder was saying, he was making statements, is that he's seeing the three. You know, whether that's round three or what, but he's saying he keeps seeing three. If he can go in there and deliver that punching power that he has, and knocks Ortiz out in three rounds. Coming into, if Anthony Joshua was able to get over Parker,
with a knockout. And hey, man, he makes a real statement going into him and Joshua fight. If Joshua can dispose of Brock further, he makes a real good statement. And I think we're for the first time in a long time, it has all the boxing people enthused to see two heavyweights that can really whack have the opportunity to fight for a championship. And I hope these guys live up to the fight tonight. Either way that what it goes, you know, I'm looking for Wilder too, because I think Wilder and if Anthony Joshua will win on the top end of the sport, it's phenomenal. But if Ortiz wins, you know, and it's a Parker Ortiz fight, you know, bang, you know.
But well, that certainly wouldn't be as exciting.
Ortiz got some baggage that's with him, and that baggage that's with him for testing positive for banned drugs and things
right.
and competition, he's going to carry that, and it taints, you know, the game and people looking at the game. And the boxing around the world has got a brand new spark. You know what I mean? It's come out of that dark with the heavyweight division. With a brand new spark. But, Carl, in closing, we got 1 minute. Do you want to say anything about anything, your new ventures or what you're doing?
I'm excited about a couple of things. Number one, congratulations in order for you for being inducted to the National Boxing Hall of Fame. I look forward very much to being there with you that night to celebrate that honor with you. It takes us way back. We go back more years than I care to mention over the air. And I'm looking forward to one thing.
We did a lot of good things together, brother. A lot of good things.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And it's unfortunate that the world doesn't know all the things we've done. But I believe that one day they will. It's going to come to light. And I'd like to also close. I wanted to let this be known, I'm working with Lightning Lonnie Smith, a former world champion at 140 pounds, which I turned pro way back in 1980. He invented a punching machine, a punching device that will be on the market sometime later this year. So we'll be on the lookout for that, and I will keep you in the loop on that as it goes along. And hopefully at some point in time, we'll have an American unified heavyweight champion.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, look, Carl, if you want, you can hang on or you can get off. But, you know, the segment now is with our boxing historian, who you know very well, Henry Haskup, who's doing a heavyweight, Floyd Patterson. Welcome to the show. Henry, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. How about you guys?
We're excited. Henry, are you in Jersey? You over in Jersey now, Henry, right?
Yeah.
Did you get the house? Did you survive the storm, or what happened there? Yeah,
we survived it. I mean, you know, it was a lot of wind and everything, a lot of rain, but, you know, it wasn't as bad as they thought it was going to be. Yeah. I got some bad news. Joey Giambra, they told me, passed away. You know, he was a former middleweight contender back in the 50s and 60s. You know, I just want to get my condolences out to his family and his friends, because you know, he was called the uncrowned champion of the middleweight division, beating Joey Giardello twice, and you know, he was quite a guy that never got a shot, you know, a real shot at it. So, just want to say that.
We can send our condolences out to his whole family and everybody. Freaking news, you know. A lot of people are sick. You know, Tony Trim, our boxing historian, he had the flu last week. I talked to him this week. He's recovering. You know, he was down. So,
I got a bug last night, and I woke up this morning. I wasn't feeling good at all. I said, oh, man, you know, I have to ring announce this afternoon tonight at the Golden Gloves. I just hope I'm home. You know, soon enough so I can watch the fights. But you know, I feel a lot better now that I'm up and around, but, you know, I had something, you know. But anyway,
yeah.
Well, you know, the topic tonight is Floyd Patterson. And, you know, he was, you know, the heavyweight champion in the world. He was born in Waco, North Carolina in 1935. You know, his family then moved to Bed-Stuyvesant in New York, you know, when he was just in diapers. And they went from, you know, house to house, you know, moving all the time. It was mostly cold water flats. You know, he was, you know, a very to himself type of kid. Like, he wouldn't look anybody in the eye. He was very shy. You know, the kids used to make fun of him because of the clothes he wore and all this and that. So, you know, he was hungry a couple of times, and, you know, he did some bad things like all, you know, kids do, you know, at the age of 9, 10, 11 years old. And they had to send him to a reform school, you know, in New York. And that's where he first took up boxing. You know, they had some boxing gloves, and, you know, he put the gloves on and everything like this, and he kind of liked it. Then, you know, about 2 years later, you know, he had to have the reform school. He went to high school, and, you know, he went down to the YMCA with his brothers, and they had boxing there too. And, I mean, it wasn't a gym or anything like this. It was just, you know, boxing gloves and, you know, a couple of kids, you know, doing their thing. And he kind of got the liking of it, you know, so much so that his brothers and him went to this other gym. And I guess Floyd was about 14 at the time, and the gym was owned and run by a guy by the name of Gus D'Amato. And Gus D'Amato took Floyd underneath his wings and, you know, made him into a fighter. And, you know, he started off his amateur career when he was 15 years old. He won his first bout by forfeit. You know, the guy didn't show up or something like this. Then he won his next bout. But then he lost three in a row. You know, so D'Amato and another trainer thought, you know, he's getting hit too much. We got to change his style. So they told him to put his hands way up, his elbows in. And, you know, he became a much better. He kind of perfected that. It was known as the peekaboo style. You know, of course, you know, Jose Torres used it later on, and even Mike Tyson used some of it. But that kind of changed his outlook. You know, with a losing record in the amateurs, he entered the Golden Gloves. I believe that was in 1951, and he won the Golden Gloves. He won the New York Daily News Golden Gloves and the New York Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions. But then he lost the interstate, or, you know, they call it the Nationals, to this guy by the name of Guerrero. He was a southpaw, and, you know, Floyd wasn't used to no southpaws. I guess back then they didn't have too many. But that would be his last loss as an amateur. The next year he would win the Golden Gloves, the Tournament of Champions, the Nationals, and then he represented the United States in the Olympic Games in Helsinki. And came home with a gold medal. And in the finals, he knocked his opponent out in the first round. And he was the only person, you know, to knock their opponent out in the finals. Ingemar Johansson was also in that group. You know, he lost in the heavyweight class by disqualification. But that, you know, Floyd was now an Olympic gold medal winner, and he was only 17 years old. He was only, you know, really just old enough to drive, and here he comes home with a gold medal. Then he started his professional career. You know, he was very nervous, you know, his first professional fight, but he got over it and scored a four-round knockout. And then a few months later, you know, he fought a couple of guys, but most of the people thought he was too, you know, too kind. You know, he didn't have that killer instinct. You know, and a couple of fights later, he fought this guy, and, you know, he knocked the mouthpiece out of his opponent's mouth. and you know, the mouthpiece went down. Now, the rules back then, you know, you continue fighting. But Floyd stopped because he, his opponent was trying to look for his mouthpiece, and instead of pounding on the guy, Floyd looked for the guy's mouthpiece with him before he can, you know, continue. So he kind of, you know, was more or less a gentleman, you know. But then he went against this guy.
Somebody who was looking for the mouthpiece, but he was counted out and had a similar style. He wasn't looking for the mouthpiece. He was swimming around for it,
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Probably one of the greatest upsets in boxing history. But
that's
go ahead,
right. Probably the greatest. Yeah, but in his sixth fight, he went against this guy by the name of Dick Wagner. He was a former world contender in the light heavyweight division. And, you know, he had a lot of experience. And, you know, D'Amato put him against him, you know, to everybody's surprise. And, you know, Wagner was like a body puncher, and he really ripped, you know, Patterson's body, you know, like no tomorrow. But at the end of the day, you know, at the last round, even, you know, Patterson poured it on and won a close decision over Wagner. In fact, it was a split decision. Then a few months later, he had a return match with him and knocked him out. Then he also went against Von Durrell, who later on would fight the great fights with Archie Moore. You know, and he stopped, you know, he actually won a unanimous decision over him. But then they made him go against Joey Maxim. It was June 7th, 1954, former light heavyweight champion of the world. And, you know, he lost a very close decision. It was an eight-rounder. The reason why it was eight rounds is because, you know, Patterson's age, you know, was still in the teens. He was still, like, 19 years old. And, you know, they didn't, you know, they didn't consider him, you know, old enough to fight 10 rounders. That was the law back in New York at that time. Then he fought several other fights and everything like this, and you know, he became a world contender actually in 1953. Then at the end of 1955, he was the number one contender in the light heavyweight division, and Archie Moore was the champion. But in April of 1956, of course, Rocky Marciano, he announced that he was retiring. So they kind of put, you know, the title up for grabs, and there was a number of individuals that were bidding for that. So Patterson, he had to go against a guy by the name of Tommy Jackson, you know, Hurricane Tommy Jackson. It was an awkward fighter, and you know, Patterson kept a secret that he actually broke his hand in training. But, you know, he went through with the bout, and he wasn't very impressive, you know, but he snuck by with a split decision, and that led his bout to Archie Moore, you know, the old mongoose. And, of course, we all know what happened there. You know, he knocked out Moore in the fifth round and became the heavyweight champion of the world, and at that time was the youngest heavyweight champion in the world. And then he fought a return match against Jackson because, you know, the first bout was really close. And he stopped Jackson in the 10th round. And on the scorecards, you know, it was like a shutout. I mean, that was how bad Patterson beat Jackson. But just about a month later, he fought the Olympic champion, you know, Pete Rodemaker. But Rodemaker never had a professional fight in his life. But he just won the Olympics. And, you know, Patterson really didn't look that good. You know, he was knocked down, but he got back up and, you know, kind of destroyed Rodemaker. But he was only, you know, an amateur. Of course, then he defended against Roy Harris and Brian London. And then after the Brian London fight, just a month and a half later, he went against the number one heavyweight, contender in the world at the time was Ingemar Johansson. Now, Gus D'Amato, he was trying to keep, you know, Patterson away from certain guys. You know, he would say that the mob controlled, you know, boxing at the time, and they did. So he wouldn't let him fight anybody that was controlled by the IBC. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
So, you know, Zorro Foley and Eddie Machen and even Sonny Liston. But Ingemar, they figured they could beat him. You know, he was undefeated, had a good knockout punch. But, well, they figured wrong. And, you know, in the third round, you know, Patterson got hit with a big right hand. And Patterson went down. And he says that when he got back up, all he heard was the referee says, go to the neutral corner. So he actually thought he was the one that knocked Johansson down. So he was. If you watch the film, you could see him walking to the neutral corner, and there was Johansson, you know, hitting him really in the back of the head. And, you know, he went down again. Make a long story short, you know, Patterson went down 7 times in that one round. And Ruby Goldstein, who was the referee with Perrett and Griffith, you know, finally stopped the fight. And, you know, Patterson was no longer the champion. But just about a year later, he had a return match with Ingemar. And this was a different Floyd Patterson. He put on, you know, quite an exhibition, you know, and then in, I believe it was the 5th round, he knocked him down. And then, you know, Johansson got up. And then he landed one of the most perfect left hook, you know, in boxing history. And, you know, Hansen went down, and he was out even before he hit the canvas. You know, his leg was twittering and everything like this. And the referee, you know, I believe it was Arthur McCanny at the time, you know, he stopped the fight. And, you know, Floyd Patterson became the first person ever to regain the heavyweight championship of the world. Of course, he defended it against, you know, Johansson again, then against Tom McNeely. And then people were, you know, clamoring for a fight with one of the leading contenders. Of course, Sonny Liston was the man. He beat Foley. He beat Machen. You know, so he matched him against him. And Gus D'Amato didn't like it. But, you know, that's, you know, Patterson wanted to prove that, you know, he could fight anybody. And, of course, we all know that Sonny Liston knocked him out in the first round. And, you know, Patterson actually disguised himself coming out of the arena with a beard and everything like this, so he wasn't recognized. He was so embarrassed, you know. But he had a return match with Liston. And he figured, you know, this is going to be different. But the only thing that was different was 4 seconds. You know, it took 4 seconds longer for Liston to beat him again in the first round. Of course, after he was a champion, you know, he was always known as the cheese champion because, you know, he didn't fight the best. But after he, you know, relinquished the title, I mean, he did beat Eddie Machen. Then he went on to beat George Chavallo. You know, he lost to Muhammad Ali in another world title bout. But then he fought Henry Cooper, and he knocked him out. And then when Ali refused the draft, you know, to go into the Army, you know, they had an elimination tournament, and they put Patterson in there, and he fought, you know, Jerry Quarry. And, you know, he actually fought him twice. The first one was ruled as a draw, and the second one, you know, Jerry Quarry won, but most people felt that Patterson did enough to win, but they gave it to Jerry Quarry. And but the winner of the tournament was a guy by the name of Jimmy Ellis, who was actually you know, really tight with Ali. And Jimmy Ellis gave Patterson another shot. And, you know, just about everybody thought, you know, Patterson won again. But, you know, the referee, who was the sole judge, Harold Vallon, he scored it six rounds for Patterson, but 9 rounds for Ellis. And Ellis, you know, defended his title. But Patterson fought, you know, several years later. I mean, he did beat Oscar Bonavita, and his last fight was against Muhammad Ali, and you know he was stopped in the seventh round. Now after his career, he became a trainer. You know, he trained his stepson, you know, Tracy Patterson, and he trained a couple of heavyweights, and you know, then he became the commissioner.
Right.
Commissioner of New York.
Floyd Patterson, you know, he wasn't a real big man in stature like we're talking about Wilder and Ortiz or Anthony Joshua. You
no,
know,
he,
these guys are
he weighed in the 180s, you know. Yeah, he weighed in the 180s. In
so
fact, every opponent he ever defended his title against outweighed him, you know, every one of them. So it was, you know, he was a small heavyweight.
With today's heavyweights, and what do you see? Just speculation, like we always do, from a historical perspective. You know, explain a little bit about today. You know, where's he at in the history part?
Yeah, he would be too small today. I mean, he'd probably be a cruiserweight. You know, a light heavyweight cruiserweight, and he'd be doing, you know, pretty well there because he had enormous hand speed. You know, if you asked the old boxing historians and everything who had the fastest hands in heavyweight division, they'd probably tell you, you know, Floyd Patterson was either the top or one of the top, you know, as far as hand speed goes. But these guys today are like giants, and, you know, it would be very hard for him to compete against that. But a fact that, you know, he was rated in the top 10 in light heavyweight division and heavyweight division for 20 years, almost 20 years exactly. And that's longer than any other heavyweight champion ever. So, I mean, he was up there for a long time. But,
you said that. Now, let's go to the trivia question because our time's running short here.
Okay.
Our trivia question. Which retired heavyweight champions beat every fighter they ever fought? Is that
okay? Okay, there's only three of them. A lot of people think Gene Tunney and Riddick Bowe were among them, but they weren't. You know, Gene Tunney had a couple of draws. Riddick Bowe didn't beat Buster Mathis Jr. But Rocky Marciano is one. He was undefeated throughout his whole career. Number two was Lennox Lewis, who only lost two bouts. You know, that was to Rodman and McCall. And he actually returned, you know, he beat them both. Then the third one, is very few people ever get, was Ingemar Johansson. Ingemar Johansson only lost two fights in his career. That was both to Patterson. And he also beat Patterson before he lost to him. So that's the answer. It's them three. It's Marciano, Lennox Lewis, and Ingemar Johansson.
We have 90 seconds. Bob, any questions for Henry?
Henry, just real quick, what do you think about tonight, the Wilder Ortiz?
Oh, that should be a real barn burner. You know, I'm just hoping it lives up to its hype, you know. I mean,
right,
you know,
yeah.
I've seen Wilder in the amateurs, and he got stopped. So I'm very, you know, suspicious about his chin. You know, I mean, and Ortiz can bang.
I want to ask you this question: what punch did he get hit with? Was it a hook?
Well,
do you remember?
I've seen it on YouTube not too long ago. I think he got hit with a couple of punches, and you know, He was hurt. I mean, he went down a couple of times, too, so it wasn't just one punch, you know, but he was on unsteady legs, and they stopped the fight. This was a couple, you know, this is in the amateurs, of course, but,
yeah.
You know.
But, something like that happened with a young man named that I trained named Tim Austin. Everybody thought that when he was in the Olympics, he quit from the thumb and the eye. And it gave him the motivation in the professional ranks to go on and fight like a tiger. He got his jaw broken the first round and end up fighting all of the 9 rounds to knock a guy out. It gave him the power and enthusiasm. I think tonight's going to be a great fight. But in closing, we'd like to thank all of y'all for tuning in to the World Boxing Review. Our guest, Carl King, special thanks. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. And our boxing historian, Henry Hascott. Great job, y'all. It's a great show. And you can tune in every Saturday from 11 to 12 right here. And our website, you can go view the other shows we've done at www.theworldboxingreview. You can Google it, and it'll come up, and you can press there. Thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good week.
Good night.
Bye.